right, welcome back to the big program. Time now for On the Mark, powered by Booster Juice. Visit Booster Juice today and try the Strawberry Serenetti Teaser. It's a perfect balanced blend of strawberries and green tea that is sure to put some extra spring in your step this spring. It's only at Booster Juice. As we welcome in Mark Spector from Rogers Sportsnet to the Sports 1440 studios. Good morning, Spec.
Good morning, Kevin. What's going on?
Good weekend. Oh, did you get up to any trouble?
Yeah, no. Very nicely working working practices, getting ready for a hockey series. Watched a little hockey.
Well, if you watched the Jets in the Colorado game.
You watched a lot of hockey.
You couldn't take your eyes off the screen. You would have missed a lot, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a fun weekend. Just got my column, just went up on setting up the orders for all those looking for an early read on what's going on around here. So, yeah, this is the best time of year. First round is the best round always.
Isn't it? And, you know, we're looking at pretty good weather here. So 17 for a high today, which means it's a good night. And when you go down to the rink, and now you got things at Ice District. You got the two parks. You got the Ford tailgate party in Ice District. Then you got the Scotiabank Fan Park. So now you're adding another, 3,000-4,000 fans, maybe more down there.
Yep.
I mean, you saw down in Winnipeg yesterday when you see
the Winnipeg.
They have the camera outside.
Yeah, that's good. And they'll do that in Edmonton. We got two spots. There's two big places everyone parties outside in. And to be honest, you know, there's so many hockey fans in Edmonton, they'll fill those places up. Yeah. But the more expensive tickets get, and playoff tickets are pretty pricey, it makes just a lot of people may say, I want to enjoy the experience, but I don't have the $400 to get in, so let's go do one of those.
For a higher up ticket, too. Yeah, the ticket prices, we all know, they are expensive come playoff time. Mm-hmm. And this allows hockey fans to get together, support your team, watch it outside. I mean, again, good weather here for tonight and then for game number two on Wednesday. And then actually it sort of doesn't get, the weather goes downhill when the Oilers are on the road. So
is that what's going on?
Yeah. So good for that.
A little windy. I feel like I'm in like Lethbridge or Tabor or something.
I golfed yesterday at the ranch and it was probably 50 mile an hour winds.
Yeah.
The Duke golfed at, what was the course, Duke?
Well, I don't know if you can say I golfed. Okay, I got out there. Got a Balmoral, right on the west side of Red Deer.
And he said, hailing, Spec.
I was hailing on you.
For a few minutes, right, when we kind of, the monsoon had passed, right, as we got to the clubhouse. The place was empty, of course, because the forecast was brutal. But we're like, man, this really shaped up well for us. Mm-hmm. Got half out to pull up to our drives on hole three, and that's when the hail started coming down, and we took shelter for a few minutes, went out and played the rest of that hole and the next one before the marshals came and said, get out of here, scram, losers.
Scram.
You're not going on these greens with the pebble-sized hail covering all of them. So we got a rain check and we'll go back later this summer, the brother-in-law and I.
I haven't had a chance, Spec, to zip through your column. As you said, you just posted it. So I'm kind of going into this cold to ask you a little bit.
Okay.
And you can, you know, branch off, if you will. Just with this Kings roster and I was looking at the fourth line, and Low Tide says he doesn't consider it the fourth line. I do, because I think Fiala is your third line, you know, and Lizotte's been playing well. So this fourth line of Dubois, Byfield, and it looks like it's going to be Carl Grundstrom, who's coming back from injury. This is a load for any line to handle. If they, you know, there's speed there too. I mean, Byfield for a big man is fast. And Grundstrom, we saw him in the playoffs a couple of years ago when he is healthy on top of his game.
Yes.
He's a wrecking ball. And Dubois, if he ever wants to play, you know, get his head screwed on straight, we know he can be a good player. He can be a great player. But he's got to get his head screwed on straight and he's got to want to be involved.
Well, it's a weird fourth line because here's your off-season acquisition centerman, Dubois, making 8.5. He's supposed to be your first line center. That's what he's brought in here to be. Well, he's played his way under the fourth line center, so that makes him an X factor. Who knows? You're right. Mm-hmm. Maybe he plays like he's supposed to play and he's the best fourth line center in the world. Byfield had a career year this year.
Yeah, it was off at the end. He scored his 20th on the last game.
Yeah, 20 goals. He had 50 points. But, I mean, this is the guy that the last – I mean, he didn't even play, I don't think, 2 years ago. Last year he played, and he was a bit – he played okay in the playoffs. This is the big addition. Like, to me, they barely – they never had this version of Quinton Byfield last two times Edmonton met L.A. Now, he's worked his way to the fourth line because he was not very good at the end. So – you know, those are two, frankly, potential second first line players right there. Yeah. Grunstrom's coming off an injury. How's he going to react to it? That fourth line, you know, that's the possibility. I mean, I guess I'd say this to you, Kev. Mm-hmm. If they're going to win, they need some magic. The magic might come from that fourth line. If those three guys all play, that's the best fourth line in hockey.
And you have the ability to put that fourth line against one of the Oilers' top two lines, if you so choose to. Mm-hmm. And that frees up a matchup for, you know, either Dano and or Kempe with Andrei Kopitar, right?
Here's the issue. Dubois hasn't ever shown me that he's able to play defensively against a great centerman.
Yeah.
Like, Dano can play defensively. Kopitar can get you some points. Mm-hmm. Kopitar is not supposed to be the first-line center on this team. Like, not anymore. Not anymore. He's not supposed to be the first-line center on this team. He is because Dubois didn't work out. So, listen, that's in the end, they only finished a few points behind Edmonton.
Right.
They're not a vastly inferior team.
This is going to be a close series.
They got a bunch of good players up front. They don't have the high-end talent. They may have more low-end talent. Sometimes that's what wins in the playoffs.
In the last 2 years in the 13 games, 9 goals decided by 2 goals or less, 4 of them went to overtime.
Okay.
There you go. Byfield, the first year he only played 2 games in the playoffs. That was basically his rookie year.
Right.
You want to call it 2022-23. So last year he played 6 games in the playoffs, had a goal and 3 assists.
Yeah.
So he was in the lineup for.
Yeah, he only played 2 games the first year.
The first year. So,
and
I mean,
had 0 points and was not in any way a factor. Last year he was okay. I mean, 4 points in 6 games, that's all right. But he just had a breakout year. Mm-hmm. The guy's never had more than 5 goals in the NHL. He had 20 this year. He's never had more than 22 points in the NHL. He had 55 this year. So he broke out. We all saw that goal he scored. It might be the nicest goal I've seen all year. There's a good player there, man. It took him a while. I mean, this guy is a draft in 2020, and everyone wants those guys to play right away, especially when you pick them, you know, second overall. They're supposed to play right now. He took a little while, but oh boy, does he look like a player now.
For me, just the way the weekend worked out, I was at a function, the Toast of the Town on Saturday, so wasn't able to watch on Saturday. But watching the refereeing, I wanted to ask you about this.
Yes.
And again, for you, we're sort of hit and miss with games and with other commitments. But watching the Jets in Colorado, it seemed that the refereeing, they let a lot of things go.
Yeah.
Same with last night between the Predators and the Canucks. Seemed to let a lot of things go.
Okay.
Maybe it was called differently. We got a texter in here, Ricky in the Donut says, I hope the refs don't try to take over the game tonight like they did in the Rangers-Capitals game.
Yeah, they called a bunch in there. They called a bunch against Carolina and the Islanders, and they called a bunch in the Leafs too.
Okay.
Like, you know, the stick in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. So it's not consistent across the board, for sure. I like to see them let everybody play more. That's my style that I prefer. I don't love, you know, there was a play yesterday in the Florida game, was it, where a guy had one hand on his stick, another guy slashed his stick, and the guy dropped his stick because he only had one hand on it, and they call for slashing. He didn't break his stick. He just slashed his stick. To me, you know, I hate that call.
Mm-hmm.
We slash each other's sticks in hockey. If you break it, it's a penalty. If I'm not hanging on tight enough, it's my problem.
How big of an opportunity is this for Dylan Holloway tonight? So we've touched on it off the top. And then again with Alan Mitchell, the fact that Evander Kane announced that he's got the sports hernia, the severity of it. We will probably know a little more as the days go on.
Yeah.
But Dylan Holloway here has an opportunity that a lot of players don't get.
Yeah, right. He, you know, we talked about this for the last 10 days. He's got to force the coach to play him in the playoffs, which he's done. He's held up his end of the bargain. And then he needed a spot, and the door's wide open, right? Kane's not going to be a middle, doesn't look like he'll be a top 9 player at this point. So good for Holloway, man. He's done his end of the bargain. This time coming up, he's played several good games, not just one or two.
Mm-hmm.
He's forcing the coach to play him. The door's wide open. He's going to get an opportunity. That's all you can ask for.
So if Kane is out of the top 9 and is able to contribute at some level on the fourth line, so that means Connor Brown comes out? Is that
I guess. Yeah. And now we're going to, you know, we're going to have the conversation of let's watch it play out. We're going to have the conversation of, is Kane any use on the fourth line.
Yep.
You know, like he's obviously he's a good player. See, and I saw a lot of complaining this weekend about why didn't they put him on LTIR and sit him out the whole, you know, whatever, the last 2 months and...
Pick up a guy.
And I, you know what? He played 77 games. I want to say that the minute we've all heard sports hernia yesterday where I think people are like, oh my God, he should have missed 3 months. Well, he played 77 games.
Yeah.
And Evander Kane isn't afraid. Like he plays hurt. He's hurt too often, but he does play hurt a lot. So this isn't a guy that, you know, that is always out of the lineup. But he scored 24 goals. He had 44 points. That's a down year for him. He doesn't get near the a power play. So I guess my point is I don't buy this. Like I don't think Ken Holland looks at that player when he's playing every night. But 77 games. That's almost a whole season.
Pretty well.
Right?
I mean,
that guy out, I guess you pull a Kelly McCrimmon and tell him he's injured, or what do you do?
You saw him in the Calgary series 2 years ago.
Yeah, he's a gamer.
He was
phenomenal. A lot
phenomenal.
Of people don't like him, but I think he's a gamer.
I mean, in that Calgary series, he was a total wrecking ball. He was one of the best players on the ice. The Flames defense, they were scared of him.
Yep.
Because he would come in on the forecheck, and you knew he didn't give a rat's you know what about the puck.
Well, and he led your team in hits this year. So I guess I'm... Like, when a player says he's hurt, who am I to second guess him? But he didn't really play like he was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
When if you have a sports hernia, he was sixth in the NHL in hits, right? I know that that's a bit of a subjective stat. So even if he was eighth or tenth, whatever, there's 750 players in the league.
Yeah.
So he led your team in hits, hit 24 goals. Was he really? How hurt can you be?
Yeah, exactly. We got a text from Sean here. What's the difference between a sports hernia and a regular hernia?
I don't know. Good question.
Because I'm waiting for surgery on a regular hernia, he says, and there's no way I can play full contact hockey right now. Well, I would suggest that you would listen to Grant Fedoruk this afternoon. He's going to be on Jason Greger's show from Leading Edge Physio. He'll be able to explain it to you. We had the big weightlifter on, Duke. Mr. Olympia seven-time. He had the sports hernia. That was a serious hernia. When he said everything basically popped out, but yeah, I don't know.
I don't know much about hernias, man.
Well, you got to lift something to do that.
Yes, we'll see. That's the thing. That's why I stay away
just,
from
you can't
lifting.
Just chop wood at the lake, big fella, with the chainsaw. You got to get the axe out.
Yeah, no, not me.
When we come back, Scott Burnside, Burnside on hockey, and covering this series... for the LA Kings and the Edmonton Oilers. So you've known this guy a long time, eh?
Yeah, like I've known Scotty a long time.
25 years.
Yeah, he's worked for a lot of people. He's works and he's now freelancing for the LA Kings website because they wanted some, they wanted to upgrade their writing staff there. They brought in Scotty from Atlanta. So here we go.
Yeah, you know, when he came on the very first time, I had to run down the list and went, all right, we got blah, blah, ESPN, Athletic. It was everything. And then, well, you know all the places he's worked at. And then he was with the Dallas Stars for a year as well.
Yeah, he was.
So
actually, one of the interesting things in his career, he covered he was back when
years ago. Yeah, I know exactly
ago,
where you're going to go.
He covered the whole Paul Bernardo deal.
Yeah, wrote a book on it.
Wrote a book on it for the Toronto Sun, I believe.
Yeah, and we talked about that as well.
Yeah, I think that's what makes him a bit of a weirdo today, actually.
Just today? Scott Burnside will be with us at 8:20. We've got Benny Scrivens at 9 and then Daryl Evans at 9:20, all coming up on the Kevin Carey Show. And On the Mark is brought to you by Booster Juice. Energized by Booster Juice. Get the boost you need at Booster Juice. When we come back, Scott Burnside, Carey Spector on Sports 1440. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to the big program. Time now for the headliner of the day, brought to you by Mr. Reuter Plumbing, the plumber to call when the toilet mysteriously breaks after your jalapeno pepper popper fueled game with the fellas. That's MrReuter.ca as we welcome in Scott Burnside, Burnside on Hockey, now with the LA Kings covering this series. Good morning, Scott. Welcome back to Sports 1440. You're with Kevin Carey and your old buddy Mark Spector.
Well, I'm very pleased to join you this morning, and Spec may have told you we spent some time together last evening, and I just returned from a nice walk along your beautiful riverfront,
wow.
So always good to be back in Edmonton.
Well, how did you, I mean, that dinner last night, holy cow, the meetings of the minds right there with you, Spec, and Pierre Lebrun, holy moly.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed the lights dimming all over Edmonton, the collection of intellect there. So yeah.
Oh, I could just imagine. Yeah, you had fun though, Speck.
Oh, yeah, of course. Got the boys out. Shelka came out for dinner. Yeah. And I was a little nervous. Scotty decided they wanted to walk back to the JW Marriott from there.
Ooh.
We were at Cafe Amore, so it's just on like 106th Ave, 108th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, they're walking back. At least there's two of them. You guys made it back safely. That can be an ugly walk some days.
We did have to call out for directions a couple times, but it all worked out. It, no, it was great. In fact, we got back and caught the last part of the Vancouver-Nashville game, so it was good. It was a terrific night all the way around. Very memorable.
What did you make of that, the finish of that game, Scotty?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of interesting. I'm curious about, you know, what Vancouver is going to bring to the table after such a, I don't know whether it's a Cinderella season or not, but certainly a season that I don't think a lot of people expected. And I thought they'd sort of flattened out a bit maybe over the last month, although, you know, they still ended up winning the division, obviously. And but even though they got behind, I thought it was pretty impressive performance for them against a, you know, a sort of a deceivingly good Nashville team. They're, the Nashville's got some interesting things going on there. You got a lot of kids that, you know, play with a lot of pep, and of course the veterans like Ryan O'Reilly and you know, Saros and Nett. I thought it was it was an important win. We haven't seen anyone but the home teams prevail this early in this playoff season. So it'll be interesting to see. I think historically over the last few years, it really doesn't matter whether you're at home or on the road. That it's, you know, that it's not much more than a 50-50 split, but right now the home team certainly own the early advantage.
I thought, I thought Nashville watching that game was actually a very good matchup for Vancouver. They're a good enough team. They made the playoffs, but they don't do anything that one thing. They're not a giant team. They don't grind you to death, which I think might hurt. You know, LA might have been harder for the Canucks. I really like this Joshua kid a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Elias Pettersson hasn't shown up for 3 weeks here. I'm a little concerned about this guy. They're paying him $11.6 million for the next 8 years. You need a big game player there. But let's go to Colorado, speaking of which. So our Winnipeg, what makes you more concerned, that you scored six on Hellebuck and didn't win? Or if I'm the LA Kings, or I should say the Winnipeg Jets, am I more concerned that okay, I got seven. I'm not getting seven every night, but I needed seven to win last night. Like, who was sloppier in that game, Scotty?
Oh, my gosh. The way those goals were going in. I like Winnipeg to win this series. I did, you know, for what they're worth, the predictions on in my newsletter. And I like Winnipeg to win that series. I thought really... You know, they really showed a lot over the months, last month of the season or so. And at the same time, Colorado really, you know, their defensive, you know, it's easy to point at the goaltending, and Georgiev wasn't very good, obviously. But it's, you know, they've been a leaky team defensively for quite some time now. And I just thought, given the way the Jets have played, and certainly Connor Hellebuck, for my money, is going to win the Vezina Trophy, you know, should... The overall Jets attack should be able to, you know, in spite of Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, Mikko Rantanen, that I thought the Jets would prevail. I did not think that they would be in a 7-6 shootout like that. And it really does make for interesting watching now in game two then. So what does – there really isn't a plan B for Colorado in goal. So, you know, I don't know what Jared Bednar's thinking about that, but they don't really have a plan B. And if you're the Jets, you know, they didn't look good early. Colorado really brang it. They really showed up early and really, you know, dictated pace, and shots on goal early were heavily in favor of Colorado. So I think if you're the Jets, you got to be pretty happy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you probably both teams throw that out the window and move on. And my guess is we won't see a game like that again. We may see Colorado give up a bunch of goals, though, because I'm not sure they've got a fix for that.
Kev, I want to say quickly, two games in a row, Winnipeg's pumped 7 goals past Colorado here.
Well, they had 6-3 advantage in the 5-on-5, 5v5. So they outscored 6-3. Adam Lowry outscored Nate McKinnon while playing against him, scored 2 goals. There's your game right there.
Yep.
So, Scott Burnside with us, Kevin Karius, Mark Spector on Sports 1440. Before we get into the Kings and Oilers, the series that you're covering for LA, Scott, I just wanted to get a quick thought on what you think's happening in the Boston-Toronto series. Very early yet, but the Bruins seem to dominate game number one. And as you know, in this country, everyone's going bananas thinking the Leafs are going to bow out to the Bees once again.
Yeah, I watched that game in Los Angeles, or technically in El Segundo, I suppose. And I just, you know, having a long time ago, I covered the Leafs for a couple of years, and it was sort of the opposite. You know, this was in the Pat Quinn days, and the Leafs would limp into the playoffs, maybe in the 7 or 8 seed, and then it invariably crush a much better Ottawa team in the first round. And that was to be expected every spring. And unfortunately, now what you have with this Leaf team in the Austin Matthews era is that they light it up offensively during the regular season, and there's all kinds of hope and thinking about, will this be the end of the, you know, the 67 curse? And they don't translate well to the playoffs, and they just don't. And I don't know if it's a mindset, and I don't know. You know, it's easy to pile on Austin Matthews. Mitch Marner wasn't very good. William Nylander mysteriously plays all 82 games and then isn't able to play in game one. Just a team that looked out of sorts and really made it easy for Boston, right? I mean, your lack of discipline, your poor defensive play, your goaltending is only average. And again, there's not, I don't know what the, you know, the Joseph Woll, you don't really have a plan B. And so here you are. Now you're in an almost must-win situation for game two after playing so poorly in game one. I hate to say it, same old, same old. And I thought at least this was a good matchup for them. I thought this was way better than Florida, given that Boston, you know, wasn't great down the stretch, and first playoff without Patrice Bergeron, no David Krejci. I really thought this would be a good matchup for the Leafs, but boy, they made it easy for Boston in game one, and they will have to be a lot better, or it'll be over in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk matchups. Let's go to the Kings Oilers. We were just talking about how they seem to have a fourth line with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Quinton Byfield on it.
Carl Grundstrom will probably draw in here.
Grundstrom was coming back in. I guess my question, Scotty, is like, I guess on paper that's your fourth line. That's too much beef to be a fourth line, a real fourth line. No one planned on Pierre-Luc Dubois being a fourth line center when they signed that guy. And Quinton Byfield had 55 points. So I guess, is that a bit of an X factor for the Kings? If that line surely can't play like a fourth line, can they?
Well, no, I think the hope is, Jim Hiller, you know, I've been around for a few days now and had a chance to, you know, chat with Jim, and you look at how this team is built, and Drew Doughty talked about this yesterday before we flew to Edmonton, and just how he felt this team might be as good a team as he's been on with the Kings basically since the last Cup win, which was the last time they won a playoff series in 2014. He pointed out, listen, it's our consistency, right? When we're consistently playing the way we can, this is, it's a really good team. And it is. And the way they've built this lineup under Jim Hiller reminds me a bit of Vegas, is that they are four lines deep. I know it's the ultimate cliche. Every team would love to have four lines deep. But, you know, to your point, and whether it's really a third line or a fourth line or whatever line it is, but if you have Pierre Dubois and Quinton Byfield, you know, he slumped a little bit during the last part of the regular season, got a goal and an assist that pushed him over the edge for some bonuses. Very happy man after game 82, and his teammates were giving it to him. But I think Andre Kopitar said, no, it wasn't going to be a dinner. It was more like a banquet that he was going to owe the team for the bonuses. But, you know, that's a line that should, you know, when they're going And when they're going in a north-south manner, which I think is the key for P.L. Dubois, they can cause problems. They can create possession time in the O-zone. They can create turnovers. Maybe you draw a penalty or two. And I think you look at all those lines, you know, Jim Hiller was talking about the other day, but you've got Kevin Fiala, who might be, you know, in terms of raw skill, might be their most skilled player, but certainly highly skilled, playing on the wing on a line with Blake Lizotte and veteran Trevor Lewis. And Jim Hiller said he likes that line because he feels it suits Kevin Fiala's strength. You got two guys that can dig pucks, be disruptive in the offensive zone, and that gives Fiala space and time to do what he does with his skill set. So, you know, I think he, in the top two lines, I think it's fair to call them that, are both solid with really good players. You know, Trevor Moore's turned into an outstanding NHL player, like a bona fide top six guy. Obviously, Adrian Kempe is a top end performer, and having Victor Arvidsson back after missing most of the season, such a huge part of that line, playing with Phil Deneau and Trevor Moore. He's got that playoff experience, been to a final, has a, you know, he's just sort of a presence about him. So I think the way that lineup is built, if they can stay consistent and if they don't, you know, give Edmonton too many power play opportunities and Jim Hiller doesn't have to shorten his bench, I think you'll find that those four lines play if not equal minutes, then within probably 3 or 4 minutes from top to bottom. And that's ideal for the LA Kings in terms of how they feel that they can maybe turn the tide in round three of this of this series.
Scott Burnside with us on Sports 1440. I agree. I think Victor Arvidsson is going to be such a critical piece to the Kings' success in this series. As you mentioned, went to a final with Matthias Ekholm with the Nashville Predators back in 2016-2017. You did mention Jimmy Hiller, Scott. And you've interviewed, you know, hundreds of coaches over the years in your time covering the NHL. What's your original take, your first take on just seeing a guy and getting to know him for the couple of days that you've been on the Kings beat, so to speak?
Yeah, it was interesting because I didn't know Jim, so I called Barry Trotz, and Barry gave him, or give it to him, but he hired him for his staff with the Islanders, and he's had a ton of NHL experience, right? Whether it's with Mike Babcock and Detroit and Toronto, and certainly with Barry Trotz with the Islanders, and then with the Todd McClellan staff in Los Angeles before taking over when the Kings moved on from Todd earlier this year. And everyone talks about his ability to communicate and just, you know, a guy who is not his way or the highway. It sounds like it's a very collaborative effort with the rest of the Kings coaching staff. Alex Laferriere, who's playing in his first playoff game, his college kid out of, not a kid really, but out of Harvard a couple of years ago. But he talked about how Jim Hiller spoke to him and really helped him through periods of this season when, you know, he hit that kind of college wall, right? You're used to playing 40 or 45 games, and now all of a sudden you're like, geez, that gets me about halfway through what I need to get done here. And he credited Jim Hiller with really being a sounding board and providing information on how he, Laferriere, could, you know, could get back to, you know, a successful way of playing. And I think that's, you know, my sense of it around the Kings is that he just has really been a guy who's, you know, he's not afraid to make hard choices and decisions. Tonight will be the first night they've had their full healthy lineup all season. So, you know, he's had to, you know, cobble together lineups really since he took over, and now he's got a full complement of players. But it does sound like a guy who really, you know, sort of listens before he acts. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. He's been loath to go down the road of whether he's nervous or what it means to him personally. But boy, he's been, you know, this is a big moment for him. Yep. First NHL head coaching playoff gig after a long, long career in other roles. So it'll be interesting. And well, and no different than Chris Knobloch, I suppose.
Yeah, it's funny. You got two teams playing for the third time, and neither of the coaches have head coaches have done it before. So up here, Scotty, this becomes, in terms of stylistic hockey, good versus evil, right? Edmonton is the home of free flow, forechecking hockey, you know, puck possession, make nice plays, create highlights, score goals. LA is playing this 1-3-1. Jim Hiller said to us up here last time he was here, one of his mentors is Jacques Lemaire, who is personally responsible for ruining hockey when he was coaching in Jersey and Minnesota. They had to change the rule book because of Jacques Lemaire. So I guess my question sort of becomes, you know, a fast game where we're not regrouping all the time makes it difficult for LA to get into that 1-3-1. A game that's always moving, you won't see as much 1-3-1, frankly. A slower game where people are kind of changing and the defenseman's sitting there waiting for everybody and everyone gets in their spot, that becomes a 1-3-1 game. Can the Kings beat the Oilers in a faster game? If they don't get time to set up and play that picket fence game all night long, do they have a plan B? Can they still win?
Well, I think it goes back to the lineup and the depth that this Kings group has. And it's not just up front, but I think especially up front, but certainly along the blue line. And a lot of these players who got a taste of playoff life over the last 2 years against Edmonton have grown and matured. So, you know, there's not going to be, you know, as much of the wide-eyed, you know, holy cow, we're starting the playoffs in Canada and in the heart of hockey country. So that, those kinds of things should go by the boards. And so I think if there is, you know, if you are able to roll those four lines, and again, if you get, you know, if it gets to become more of a track meet than what you would initially hope for, I do think there's enough talent there that, you know, that's it doesn't mean instant disaster for the Kings. But I think what you really want to do if you're the Kings is you want to impose your will on the Oilers as much as possible, knowing that it can't be done all the time given the Oilers roster. So, you know, I don't know that it's so much as, oh my God, if it starts to go end to end, if there is some fastness to the game, that suddenly precludes the Kings from being competitive. I don't think that's necessarily the case. But you know, it's obvious they would prefer to take Edmonton out of its comfort zone by slowing the game down, by playing in a way that takes away from Edmonton's strength and I think plays to the Kings' strength. So, I'm not sure if I'm answering your question. We know how they would like to play. I think they're able to, given their skill set, you know, if things get fast, then I think that it becomes an interesting game to watch for sure, to see if, you know, how you keep pace. That's going to be one of the great parts of this chess match in this series. And if it does get faster, though, it just certainly puts a lot more pressure on Cam Talbot in net. And, you know, again, you want to make your, you know, life as easy as possible for your goaltender, especially against this Oiler team.
Hey, Scott, thanks for your time this morning. Hope you had a wonderful night with Speck and Schalke and Pierre last night. And we'll see you down at the rink later today and tonight. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime.
All right, that's Scott Burnside. Burnside on hockey and covering the series for the LA Kings. And our headliner of the day, brought to you by Mr. Reuter, the true goat of local plumbing. That's MrReuter.ca. You know, Speck, he mentioned Cam Talbot.
Yes.
How much of a short leash? How short? I asked Lotide the same. Is the leash shorter than maybe years past? David Riddick's played very well every time he faces off against the Oilers.
Not a David Riddick fan, so if I'm coaching the team, he doesn't have a short leash because I don't like my backup much.
Okay,
I guess
every time he plays the Oilers, he plays well.
I guess his numbers are good against Edmonton.
We'll talk about that a little more after the break.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Okay. Yeah. To me, if I'm pulling Cam Talbot, I'm going
with
Riddick.
Trouble.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, get to some of your texts and a little more preview of the Oilers and Kings Game 1 tonight at Rogers Place. It's the Kevin Carey Show with Mark Spector on Sports 1440. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to the show. Kevin Carey, Mark Spector with you on a Monday morning. Beautiful Monday morning.
Come on, big day, man. Playoffs are starting.
Can't wait to get down to the rink. You're going to head out the morning skates or... Morning skates in the playoffs are...
Yeah, it's way better. Way better. More juice.
But there's not a lot of guys skating a lot of the time. And as the playoffs progress, really.
You tend to go in the other team's room. Or you make sure you do. You get to know some, you know, you're a regular around the same team.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about the playoffs. You really get to know the other team.
Yeah.
Often in the regular season, they're in, they're out. They don't even practice. After a game, I'm working the Oilers. I don't get in LA's room a lot of times. So it's nice. We'll all sit down with Drew Doughty at some point.
I was just going to say, over the years, when you're ranking players that you've talked to, coaches, if you want to throw coaches in, let's leave the coaches out. But when you're ranking the players that you've talked to over the years, where does Drew Doughty rank for what the scribes in the media call a soundbite?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's in the modern day situation. Like, I go back to... You know, I go back to walking up to Al Iafredi in the dressing room and saying, hey, you got a second? He goes, meet me at the stick bench. And he walks up with a cigarette behind his ear and another cigarette in his hand. And he hops up with the stick bench, lights it with a blowtorch. And you got Al Iafredi for 20 minutes, two smokes. He lights one smoke off the other after practice. So, you know, we're going back here.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good interview you got out of Planet Al, but... In today's world where it's no one's smoking anymore or drinking beer, where he's in his stall and it's you know, it's today's world. There's no one better than Drew Doughty. He brings it. Mm-hmm. He comes to Edmonton. He's happy to talk about the opposition. A lot of guys don't like to. He loves talking about McDavid. He's very he's happy to say when he gets burned by McDavid, he's happy to say he loves playing against him and beating him. And so, yeah, and he's got gravitas because he's an Olympic player. Doughty's one of the best there is.
Well, cup champion, Olympic gold.
He's a
workhorse.
Oh,
and
good player.
Old school player.
And an old school
player. You know, so when you were asking, and I mean, it's great because he sets up court. And, you know, again, you say he loves to talk about the opposition.
Yeah,
and
he's
willing to, for sure. It's a refreshing because it's not a canned answer. It's well thought of.
Right.
But he's been around long enough to know what the questions are coming, and he's thought about what his answers are going to be as well, but they're your canned answer, so to speak.
Yeah, no, right. And you know what? The one thing about hockey that we're finding now particularly, it's so fast, and it's become very complicated, and it's become... You know, your reads have to be just boom, 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 or you're not a good player.
It's like insane.
The guys that aren't that smart, I'm not naming names, when you see a guy with all the tools and you go, man, why isn't that guy a better player? It's because he's not smart enough to compute the game, right, to think the game. Doughty's the opposite of that. You know, you talk to him, he's missing a tooth, and he's a bit of a hammerhead some days, and, you know, you love that about him. He's a smart guy. He put his words together. So when you throw a good question at him, he's got a good answer for you. That's what you like. Smart people make good interviews.
That one aspect you just said, the player's got to get back to the puck faster now, and it's a quicker game than we've ever seen it.
Everything.
That is going to be so key. And it's you watched it last night. Colorado, in the first period against Winnipeg, just pounded the Jets.
They were way too fast for Winnipeg.
They throttled Winnipeg in the first, whatever you want to call it, 10, 12 minutes. I think shots were 10-1 or something like that.
Score was, I think, was it 1-2?
I think they got 2-0.
They got 2-0, so. Yeah. Anyway, no, they were way quicker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got to slow that down. You can't. Colorado's one of the fastest teams in the league, and they play fast, and there's a difference there. They can move it. They got guys that can really move the puck, and we've watched it with Edmonton.
Yeah. Barber in Peace River says, I'll be in Wednesday through Saturday. Do you think the boys will skate Thursday before leaving town? Absolutely not. They'll be on a plane, and
a
you'll miss them. Sorry, Barber. This is one from Adam Speck. Is Deneau LA's best-kept secret? Seems like no one ever talks about him, but he's sneakily one of the best two-way guys in the whole show.
Well, is there a guy in the league that handles McDavid better than Deneau, do you think?
Probably not.
I'm not sure there is. Malcolm Kadri, when he played in Toronto, was real good against McDavid, but that was a few years back.
And, you know, he had 17 goals this year, so, I mean, he contributes offensively. He's a two-way guy, again.
So here's the problem. Is he their second-line center? If Dubois was the first line center like he's supposed to be, and Kopitar was second and Deneau was third, this team could really do damage.
Do you think, though, they're bringing in Dubois because down the road he's going to be taking over, but he wasn't ready? Do you think that they brought him in and said, we need you to figure things out a little bit, port side? You got to play with either one of these guys in the top two lines playing left wing?
Well,
and
maybe that's been.
Yeah, right. And that's
they've been trying everything to get Dubois going.
They have. And maybe that's hindered his performance this year a little bit.
Listen, but when you walk in and sign, what he's making, what, 8.5 for what, 7 or 8 years?
Must 16 be goals, 24 assists this year.
Not is, near enough.
Yeah.
Like, the point is, that signing, he's supposed to be ready. He's been through it in Columbus. He's been through it in Winnipeg. This guy, we're not bringing him in to try to teach him how to play the game. He's got a contract for a first-line center. He's supposed to act like one and play like one.
8.5 And he's right through till 2030-31.
So in terms of roster structure, if I have a genuine first-line center on the Kings and Kopi's my second-line center and Dano's my third-line center, oh, my God, am I good up the middle. Mm-hmm. Like, that is – Kopitar is still at his age, to his credit, a genuine second-line center. He's not a first-line center anymore.
Yeah.
And if Dano's my third, oh, my God, this is a good team.
Yes.
But they're missing the key component. Pierre-Luc Dubois has not delivered, and maybe he still will. But at this point, he's lining up as a 4C, not a 1C.
Mm-hmm. We touched on the Kings goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
I asked the same question to Low Tide. Is Stu Skinner ready for this?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think his sample size this year from, you know, we talk about an Oilers team that from the first week of November till the end of the season was the best team in the league.
Yeah.
I think that's that's not a tiny sample size. It's a pretty three quarters of the season. And I say the same about the goalie. If you throw his stats away from October and the first week of November and then look at him, he's right up there with the best in the league. So, yes, I don't know how much better he's supposed to be in his second year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I wish he was in his fifth year? Sure. Right? Do I wish he'd had four playoff runs under his belt? Yeah. But he had a pretty good run last year. He must have learned a lot. He's a cerebral guy.
Yeah.
He's in a good goalie.
It's going to be good. We'll really break down the goaltenders when we have Ben Scrivens on at the top of the hour, get his take on not just the Kings and the Oilers, but maybe around the league and what he's seeing as well. Good point from yourself with Scott Burnside. So two coaches never coached a game in the playoffs here. How much will that come into play? And then secondary to that, how much do you think Paul Coffey will help and benefit Chris Knobloch here?
Well, that's a good question. You know, he's obviously been helping him all year because he just showed up right at the start. And this defense, he's helped them by making the defense a lot better and move pucks better and get pucks on tape better. It's kind of weird. Like Knobloch said yesterday, he leans on his assistants because Gullitson's been around for both of these series, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has Mark Stewart been around for both these series? I believe he has. So he'll and his players. Like, do you really need to coach Leon Draisaitl up on how to play the game against LA? Like,
no.
Even he admits. You know, I asked him yesterday. Was a 23-year-old Leon Draisaitl as willing to dump a puck in and chase it as a 28-year-old Leon Draisaitl is? He says, "No, I figured it out. You got to dump and chase sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
You know, sometimes."
In the playoffs, I mean, Leon Draisaitl has been unreal in the playoffs. And on one leg 2 years ago, continued on. And I touched on this, I don't know, 2-3 months ago when everyone's talking about the makeup of the lines. Because Nuge and Hyman were playing with Connor for that long stretch. So Leon never had that star guy on his, you know, he was playing with, if Kane wasn't around, then, you know, he was playing with Fogle and McLeod was up there for a little bit, right?
Yep.
So I said, Leon, if he continues to play the way he is, he's going to be such a critical component. And it's not earth-shattering news.
No.
Leon is as good as it gets when it comes to a playoff performer.
Well, and I want to say, if you go back to 2017, the two points per game leaders in playoff games are McDavid and Draisaitl. In fact, Draisaitl and McDavid in the entire NHL. So my point is this. When you're the Oilers, and the old cliche goes, your best players got to be your best players, you know, we're not asking questions about those two guys like Toronto fans are about Mitch Marner. Right, we're not looking at Draisaitl like we are with Pettersson, who's not showing up here when it counts. Now it's only one game. Hopefully, it gets better. I'm not crapping on the guy, but he was invisible last night. I can't remember a first game of a series or an important moment where we looked down at the two best players in Edmonton and said, "Ah, those guys didn't show up," and they haven't shown up for a while. No one's ever said that in this town.
Well, look for games played in the playoffs. 2022 led the playoffs with assists.
Right,
and. You know, and they're not getting to the final. They only played four games in round three.
Yep.
Last year, led the playoffs with 13 goals. That's how inept the goal scoring was in the playoffs last year. When you play two rounds and you're still leading, I think he's tied. He was tied with the, I think, could be Marcia, so I'm going to have to check here in the break. But you're leading. You're leading after two rounds, and your lead stays for four rounds. I mean, come on.
Not enough goals going in.
Yes. and it shows how valuable you are in the two rounds of the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. No, those guys can play and play hurt. Both guys have played hurt. I mean, we'll never, the game that I go back to is that game six in the first meeting with L.A. when the Oilers were down 3-2 and they went in L.A. and McDavid played, in my mind, the best, maybe the best game he's ever played. I'll never forget that game.
Mm-hmm. When we come back, Ben Scrivens will break down the goaltending matchup in this series, plus around the league, what he sees in net in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll have Daryl Evans at 9:20 and Laurie Ann Munzer at 10 o'clock and Lane Brown coming up at 10:40. All before that, it's time for a Sports 1440 update brought to you by High Street Insurance. Driven by people, not products. We are people taking care of people for 10 years, servicing Canadian businesses like yours. HighStreetInsurance.com. Check them out. Here is the Duke.